Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Joining us now is Jonathan Hutton with Hot Mike and Withrow. Hutton, best time of the week, Hutton o'clock.
I like it. Hut.
Do we have Hutton?
Hutton's on there somewhere.
He's muted.
Oh, he's muted. He pulled a Joe Rexroad.
Yeah. He did.
While he unmutes.
Classic.
Exactly.
Quick Wimbledon report to our man Eubanks. He went down in the fifth set. He was up 2-1. Tiebreaker in the fourth set. Fell short and just lost it. He just lost
it. You saw it. You saw it.
He lost the mojo. He melted down.
Yeah.
Doggone it.
Dang. Oh, well. Did we get Hutton unmuted?
Hutton's he's activated.
All right, there he is. He un-Joe Rexroded himself.
What's up, guys?
Happy to have you, Hutton. Always appreciate our chats with you. I want to get into Titan stuff, the Northwestern hazing scandal, but I actually want to start, weirdly enough, with baseball. All-star game last night. Rob Manfred said once we get things settled with the A's and with the Rays, then we'll be poised for expansion. And as far as the MLB expansion conversation is concerned, Nashville is always part of that conversation. Do you think it's a legitimate chance and opportunity for Nashville to get a Major League Baseball team?
I really feel like Nashville's at the front of the line. I don't know if Willie, maybe I don't know if you agree or disagree. You know, I've heard rumblings that the winter meetings are going to be back in Nashville this coming winter. I think they want to put Nashville on the front and center, full display. And I honestly, I think the owners get back to the city itself compared to when the winter meetings were here last, it has transformed and changed so much. And any league, any professional organization, any tournament, anything that lays eyes on downtown, they end up wanting to come back and host a big event. So, we also have leadership behind the scenes. The hosting committees and different things that work with leagues in order to get here, work with big events. So, yeah, I mean, I think Nashville is compared to the other cities, it makes more sense than, to me, Salt Lake City and some of the others that
Montreal.
Have been further, Charlotte. Now, I wouldn't mind Montreal being back in, but they're going to add two teams, and things will be locked up once they figure out the A's and the Rays. But and that could take who knows how long. But I think, on the short-term future of what we consider down the road, I mean, how much Nashville's changed in the last decade. I think in the next decade, certainly Major League Baseball will give Nashville every chance to get a team here.
And I think we need some time because, first of all, you're going to have a new mayor. You're going to have you have this group that's been trying to lay the groundwork, but they have not gained a lot of momentum. They don't have.
They need a billionaire. They lack a billionaire.
100%. That's a great way to put it. They need a big money billionaire person to come in and start driving it and be the leader to start making the relationships that you've got to make with real muscle behind it and say, okay, here's where we want to build the stadium. But let's talk about it. Like there's not anything other than a drawing here or a press conference here or an interview over here. It's a great idea. To really have the muscle behind it and the layers to this is a long, long way away. And they don't have the real money backing it at this point. So and maybe Major League Baseball could say, well, hey, look, there are people out there that want to own a Major League Baseball team. Have you learned? I mean, maybe that's the next step is Rob Manfred has to help the existing group or maybe create their whole separate group and bring somebody to Nashville that can do it.
Well, it's not like this thing. It's not like this thing has been some hidden secret for, you know, forever, and nobody knew about it but this group of people. Everybody has been has known about, you know, the potential of baseball coming here to Nashville, Hut. So what would make me
think they know that John Lohr's partnered with it. He's to me, he's been kind of divisive on who likes him and who doesn't. I'm just being straight up.
I agree.
But what I'm saying is,
the billionaire that's willing
the
to
billionaires,
partner with
they knew, they know that Nashville wants a team.
Yeah.
If the billionaires hadn't jumped in now, what is going to make them jump in? That's how I look at it. If they hadn't jumped in after 5-10 years, then when are they going to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes them jump in is how the city reacts whenever they ask for the moon and stars on a stadium, right? That's number one. And they'll compare that to the offers from the other cities. And then the other thing that can really help the Nashville Stars local, not local, but the full ownership pact that they've created with John Lohr at the top is acquiring land that no one else has the rights to except for them if, in fact, they want to build a stadium there. And that would also help lure a billionaire-type owner that would be in partnership but be the controlling owner moving forward. So they've got that land, a downtown space, and potential of what that could become.
I was actually talking about this while we were watching the All-Star game. I was watching with a group of my friends, and we were saying, let's put a price tag on just what it would cost. So just to enter the league, at least $1 billion, maybe $2 billion just as an entry fee, expansion fee.
I thought the expansion fee may have even been closer to three.
Mm. I mean, so that's
plus
let's just say
$2 billion-ish for a stadium.
That's okay. So now we're up to $4 billion at least, right?
At least
$2 billion
might be
low-balling. All of the other costs of building a staff and everything. So that's why I was saying you can't just have the enthusiasm and the want. You've got to have a person that has enormous dollars. And as we talked about with the whole golf thing, with LIV, the higher these franchises are worth, it's a great thing that these franchises are worth so much, but there's less and less people that have the true wealth to actually go buy it. The days of the Adams family, they're less and less of the species right now that own teams that have been in the family business for decades and generations. It's becoming less and less because of the price tag. So much. So every time that one is sold, that's great because it's like the Ottawa Senators were worth almost $1 billion. That's great.
Snoop Dogg was going to buy him.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg was going to be in on that. Ryan Reynolds was going to be in on that for a while. That was a fun thing. They didn't get it, but you see where I'm going with this. Like if the Ottawa Senators are $1 billion, then Major League Baseball expansion fee, they're like, okay, $2 billion just to get into the discussion here. And then you got to build a stadium and then you got to do all these other things. We're talking about a huge amount of dollars.
Crazy. But we're going to flip roles a little
bit. While we're talking baseball.
Yeah, you had a question for us.
Sorry. Yeah, I want to throw this out there and just to ponder, because I think this could be on the horizon. Because we've been discussing a lot, the four of us, on the gambling policy in the NFL. And over the last week, I've been pondering, like, well, these players are betting on apps, right? They're Calvin Ridley suspended for a year. To me, that's very punitive. I think it's fair. It sends a message. And then they apply for reinstatement based on their actions being, have you bet on the league again since we told you not to and suspended you for a year? Mm-hmm. They let you back in. And I think the general sporting public thinks, okay, Ridley's back in the league. There's not a big outcry. Willie, what happens, and I've always used this guy as the example, what happens when Ronald Acuna, hypothetically, is caught betting on Major League Baseball? Is he banned for life compared to Ridley being banned for a year? And if he's not, don't they absolutely have to say that Pete Rose is no longer banned from baseball? Doesn't that help his argument more than anyone?
Hmm. I mean, there's a topic right there that we could go on for a while. But
we haven't.
In theory, the baseball
haven't heard anything. These players are doing it in every league, right? I believe that.
It's hard to imagine that baseball is batting 1,000 that nobody has bet on a baseball game. It's hard to. Football is important. Football has been fortunate that it's not a high-profile guy that's been caught yet, right?
That
we know of. But in theory, your question: let you throw out a superstar name. You threw out Acuna. It could be
it could be anybody,
all-star that played last night. If you bet on baseball, there is a sign in every clubhouse and has been for decades and decades. If you bet on baseball, you are permanently ineligible. You're out of the game. It's a Pete Rose. So,
oh, wow.
That could happen, right?
It absolutely could happen.
It's just weird how where I'm conditioned to think that you can't bet on baseball and you're done, right? But across the street at the National Football League, I'm complaining about the policies that are in place betting on sports apps and these billionaires making millions off of these companies that are pushing gambling. I'm fascinated by it because baseball will handle it way different. And I think the reaction to it will be far more vocal on the side of whatever player's caught doing it compared to what we saw with Ridley.
And I don't know what the difference is. because this is something that we've talked about, is why are the only gambling violations across professional sports that we have heard of all centralized in the NFL? There's not a single gambling violation in Major League Baseball, in the NHL, and MLS, so on and so forth.
How hard are you looking? Yeah, that's the other thing.
They're the ones looking for it, Mace.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if I'm not looking, I'm not going to find it. You knew it got serious when the NFLPA started, you know, telling these agents, hey, listen, they're telling on players, so you need to, you know, get your players together and let them know that you don't, if you are betting, be careful. And please, please don't bet on NFL games because they will catch you because they're looking now.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yep. In baseball, the writers, like the PD policy is another great example. Mm-hmm. First offense in football is 6 games. You get, what, half a season or 50 games or something in Major League Baseball. But eventually that comes back to bite you if you're a great player because you're not going to the Hall of Fame. The voters aren't going to – they just don't even cast a ballot for you. In the NFL, it's, again, way different based on certain players violating the PED policy, which is collectively bargained. And Major League Baseball players have all this power, but the one thing they don't have is the voting power for the Hall of Fame and the precedent that's been set by how they treat Pete Rose to this day for betting on baseball.
And with the Pete Rose example, it reminds me of whenever NIL became legal, the conversation was, well, does Reggie Bush get his Heisman back?
Right.
And the NCAA said, no, we're not going to retroactively give it to you.
The rules were what they were.
The rules were what they were. And even though exactly what he did would be totally fair and justified under current rules, we're not going to retroactively give your Heisman back. But it does feel very hypocritical in Major League Baseball if they all of a sudden change the rules just because we're living in a different time.
And Pete did make just a couple bets on a little app on the phone. Yeah. He was making a lot of bets.
He was busy.
It wasn't just a few parlays.
He was pretty in deep.
Awfully active. More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Hey, Caroline Willie and DeMace is brought to you by the News and Sports Sportsbook, the only sportsbook in Tennessee with a cash rewards program. Betting just got better. Download their app today. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, is with us now. And I wanted to get your thoughts on Jim Wyatt's most recent mailbag. He had a little tidbit in there when he was asked about the quarterback situation, about Malik Willis, how he's looking like he's coming along better this time this year than he was last year. And Jim Wyatt wrote, Malik Willis's roster spot is not guaranteed. And that caught on like wildfire. Titans Twitter became ablaze since Jim Wyatt said that. What did you make of Jim Wyatt writing that in his mailbag, that Malik Willis's roster spot is not guaranteed?
I agree with him. Sorry to disconnect this. My mic's screwing up, so sorry if the audio's terrible. Here's how I view this with Jim, and I think he's just reading, you know, but between the lines on what we all know. I don't expect Malik Willis to make the roster initially. The investment has been made in Will Levis by the new general manager. He would have to make astronomical strides forward, Malik, I'm talking about, to claim that number two spot. Or Will Levis has to really come in and basically play like Malik did in the preseason last year. Willis got the roster spot last year as a backup, and he wasn't near ready for it. And I think the same mindset will be sent to or is being taken with Levis. I don't have any doubt that if both are healthy, Levis is the number two QB. It's time for him to go grab it. It is right there for him to win or lose. And here's the thing I think that also comes into it. If Malik Willis is released, I think he makes it through waivers, and I think he's back on the practice squad. And you can have the third emergency quarterback this year as needed. That guy's got to be on your active roster. And I don't know if teams will carry three initially, but I think down the stretch of a season where you got some guys that are banged up or Tannehill doesn't have an offensive line or whatever, I think that's when he's activated and he's actually on the roster. But initially cut down day at the end of August, I don't think he'll be there just based on the numbers.
Now, Hutt, should we be – I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about, you know, this offense and finding, you know, more pass catchers. And will the offensive line, you know, be much better than they were last year? We assume they will be because it's like, man, you can't go anywhere but up the way y'all played last year. But should that be the only thing we're concerned about? And I ask you that question because the defense – this is the most turnover they've had in this defensive front and sort of secondary since Vrabel's been there. You're talking about adding two or three new linebackers. You got defensive backs that haven't played in this system and with this coach. So you're talking about a bunch of guys having to sort of mesh very quickly. And we just assume that because they were good and they were only good in the run, they were horrible in pass. But we just assume that because Jeff is back, Harold's coming, you know, back from an injury, you know, that this team is going to be, that the defense is going to be able to carry them. I don't think I'm really 100% buying into that because they got a lot of turnover.
They do, but I don't disagree. We're not talking about the defense enough. Let me also add in the reason for optimism is the coaching on that side. They get the most out of the next man up mantra on defense. And the guys that are new to this defense, while they're not coming in with the same accolades that some of the players had, like Bud Dupree, they're on the field more than Bud Dupree was. Mm-hmm. David Long Jr. was not on the field nearly as much as he should be. So they've replaced him as well. You could argue they could have just kept him for a cheap price. I was surprised that that's the only amount he got down in Miami. But point being, Mace, I trust the defensive coaches way more than what we've seen the last couple of years on offense. And I think they're solid in that area. I know Rex Road mentioned the secondary is his biggest concern for the Titans. I don't even think about the secondary in that way. And up front, they should be great based on the investment, $55 million plus invested on the defensive line alone. That's where there should be no question who's stepping up on a big play. It should be the defensive line that should help out the secondary. And the linebackers who they've brought in and guys that are up and coming, if they stay healthy, they should contribute a lot more than what we saw from guys who were here and are now gone because they'll be available. Just by that alone, I think there's reason for optimism compared to an offensive line that's continuing to rebuild. They're hinging a lot on Skoronski. They have a backup left tackle and Dillard that they're banking on being a starting quality guy. We depth concerns at wide receiver. They didn't protect the passer great last year at all. And Henry's got to be the bell cow for yet another year. I think it's more concern about the offense than it is just a lack of defensive discussion. But I understand what you're saying because they are hinging a lot on guys coming in and fitting the scheme perfectly.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutt, give me your perspective on what the inner discussions should be right now with the Titans regarding the Northwestern situation and Peter Skoronski. Right now there is zero talk of any individual player. It's all directed at the culture. Right. It was the team. It was entrenched for a long time. It wasn't any individual player. It's all directed now at the coach, and that's the crux of what's going on. But if you're Peter Skoronski and you're the Titans, I would think it stands to reason that at some point somebody's going to ask you about that. So how would you handle that part of it?
I think handling it would be just messaging. I mean, I'm not jumping to conclusions on what the players did or didn't do yet. And if Skoronski was involved in the hazing, he was also hazed. Like I just think it was a culture. One of the guys is going back, Diaz Ruiz. I can't remember his last name. Back to 2006 when Fitzgerald took over as head coach. He's going to join us tomorrow on Hot Mic. Looking forward to that because I want to know about the culture that he came into. And if it goes back to 2006, then every player that's gone through there has witnessed it, been a part of it, either on the hazing side or being hazed, probably both in some way. And I think it's just you mentioned it, the culture aspect, the messaging and the coaching of how to answer questions, I think will be the Titans' perspective on Skoronski. And the other thing, Willie, I haven't we've talked to several coaches, guys around, former college and NFL players. They all glow about Pat Fitzgerald. Like they're stunned that Northwestern fired Mr. Northwestern football.
Yeah.
And it got to this point, which was previous based on the information that an investigation that was going back to January was a 2-week suspension during the summer without pay. And it jumped from that to fired with cause. There's a news piece of this story we don't know. And if it does involve some names, then it's fair to ask those questions about the players, I'm saying. But you're right. We haven't heard anything. We haven't seen, you know, criminally any charges like that. The charge has been against the coach that they can't prove didn't know. And with that being said, no one's really talking about the players that were involved or the players that participated. So until that happens, I don't think you can grill any specific player or jump to conclusions until that news comes out. And they've been upfront with what they have now. I don't know if they were when they announced the 2-week suspension just a couple of days ago, but in the statements, they admit that there's nothing to conclude that Fitzgerald knew about what was going on. That's been the focus.
Right.
And
that will continue to be the focus, I think.
Unless the players that are jumping and talking to the student newspaper start naming names.
Right.
And that's the next layer to it. And that's when I think the question should be asked. But until then, it's more about, hey, just focus on the fact that you love Fitzgerald, and because every player is going to say that. And see what happens with the spring.
And I do think it's very possible for a lot of the players, and if you listen to Pat Fitzgerald's or read Pat Fitzgerald's statement, he said, I think 99% of our players had a good experience here. I do think it's possible you could have a really good experience, and still this ugliness did go on, you know.
Yes.
And maybe it didn't.
The other thing, too.
Yeah.
Willie, sorry. I just find it hard to believe in today's age, the coaching – the paranoia that these coaches have on a day-to-day basis about guys talking about injuries, what they're doing, are they cool with their girlfriend, are they having, you know, issues there, are they hanging out with the wrong crew? They've got all these analysts, and everybody is in every facet. That may not be the case totally at Northwestern, but any college coach is going to be, to me, in the know, or have someone that kind of gives feedback on the tone and tenor of a locker room. That's it's hard for me to believe he didn't know what was going on. Maybe not to the full extent, but surely he knew. Even if that's just based on the fact that there's a player that says this was going on in 2006 when he became the head coach.
Hmm. In that matter, like we always talk about when you're scouting a player and you're trying to get as much information on each player as you can. You do your homework, right? The scouts are talking to people. You talk to the equipment guy. You talk to this guy or that guy.
Yeah.
I do wonder if the Titans ran across this while they were, you know, doing their research on Skoronski or talking to Skoronski or talking about Skoronski. Were they aware that this investigation was going on?
I mean, it started in January. There would have to be some insider info there. They did practice once at Northwestern. A couple years back, the Titans did over one day, I believe on the Chicago Bears trip or something. So, I would assume not, just because of how quiet this story has been. But they've also done their due diligence with two players. LaJuan came in with, an issue from Michigan.
Right.
Jeffrey Simmons, we've detailed at length. They've also done their due diligence in a good way there. And then, you know, you have things at Georgia that were not really taken seriously with Isaiah Wilson, and coaches that were giving, inaccurate feedback, put it that way, to the Titans front office or any front office across the league. I don't know that. I think it would be tough, though, to dig that up, Willie, because this has been so quiet for years, you know, and – I mean, I also wonder how many other programs they have something like this going on and we don't know, right? I mean, if it's happening in Northwestern going 1-11, it's not a great way to retain players in the transfer portal age.
It's kind of what I thought. Like, Northwestern, of all places, you're telling me that's the only place where this stuff is going on? There's no way. Like, part of it just felt a little bit unbelievable to me that it was going on at Northwestern.
Yeah. I like just one name. Tommy Reese, to me, would be a great fit for Northwestern. Low expectations. He was a grad assistant there. His dad spent some time there as well at the Northwestern football program. And just thinking about the Big Ten and his time spent at Notre Dame with the academic requirements, that's certainly the case at Northwestern. Again, Tommy Reese, as a young up-and-coming coach, that seems like a good fit for next offseason if they want to go the interim route for the full year because, again, they just fired Mr. Northwestern, and they have a chance to give a young coach an opportunity in 2024 based on the situation that they'll be coming in and inheriting. Who knows who's there at that time, but it's a good building block in a solid conference that you want to be in whenever they move to the expanded college football playoff.
Hey, if they want to hire him this offseason and leave Alabama without an offensive coordinator in the middle of July, I will welcome it wholeheartedly.
Well, and here's the thing. If he is a hit at Alabama, he's going to get a better job than Northwestern.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So if you're Northwestern, you want to try to gain access to him now. But it sounds like they're going the interim route, and they're retaining the current coaches, the assistant coaches.
Hutton, you are the very best. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Always enjoy this.
Awesome.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Hutton. You too. Coming up next, big swing. Barry is not quite done, but really, how big of a swing was it really? We'll discuss the Predators' recent addition coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.